Hey, what's up? Welcome to another episode of What's Up Conversations, a podcast with icons and legends of the video game industry to celebrate their art, career, and their games. In this episode, I had the honor of having Morten Elgaard, UI designer of Hitman 3 at IO Interactive, to learn more about his fantastic work designing UI and UX of that masterpiece of a game. We also discussed a lot about the art of UI design, and personally, I found this episode very educational and informative. In this episode, I also had the honor of having Arash Nadri, UI designer of Cyberpunk 2077 at CD Projekt Red, and Imad Omri, the visual artist of What's Up Conversations, on the podcast. Before we start, please make sure to subscribe to What's Up Conversations on YouTube or any other podcast streaming platforms you're getting your podcasts. You can always learn more about the podcast and my work at nikofarmusic.com. All right, let's get into it. So, let's do it. Oh, by the way, how do you like me cosplaying for Agent 47?
Very stylish. Very stylish.
Yeah, I mean, when you're interviewing Nico Fan, you have to expect something. his special ability.
A little unconvincing up here, but yeah.
That would go a bit too far.
Yeah, I wasn't committed enough to shave my head. All right.
Yeah.
Let's do this. Hello and welcome to What's Up Conversations, gentlemen. Very warm welcome to Morten Elgaard, UI designer at IO Interactive, and a deserving congratulation to you, sir, for the release of Hitman 3, which we all agreed is a beautiful piece of art regarding its UI design. And by we, I mean my very talented friends who were kind enough to join me in this episode. Honored to have Arash Nadri, UI designer of Cyberpunk 2077 at CD Projekt Red, and Emon Avery, visual artist and the man behind all the visual identity and the videos of What's Up Conversations. Right. To make it easy for the listeners who are listening to this podcast somewhere other than YouTube, please introduce yourself so our audience would be able to familiarize your voices, starting with Morten. Evening, sir.
Yes, of course. I'm Morten. I'm a UI designer, UX designer here at IO Interactive, where I've been working for 3 years.
Yeah, great. All right.
I'm Matt.
Oh, introduce yourself so we can familiarize your voice.
My turn? Is it my turn? I didn't hear it.
Yeah. It's your turn.
Yeah, you go, Arash.
Okay. So yeah, hi, I'm Arash. I'm a UI designer, UX designer, probably like Morten. I was working on Cyberpunk at CD Projekt Red. So yeah.
Great to have
everything.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah, Emad,
and as Nico first stated, I am Emad Omri. I do visual design, motion design, and I've been working with Nico Fire for the past, I don't know, two years? I don't know. I mean, I've lost track of time. So yeah, here I am. And I am happy to be talking with you guys.
It's awesome. Thank you guys for being here. All right, Morten. The other day you told me something very interesting that I'm going to quote here. Quote. UI and UX are the topics not often talk in games, as it meant to be unintrusive and intuitive to the player. So people only really notice it when it really annoys them or is misleading. Unquote. To make it clear for the people who are not familiar with UI and UX design in games, please tell us what are they about and what's the difference between the two, and also why most people don't notice a game's HUD.
Well, UX is short for user experience, and that normally entails like the menu structure, how you navigate through that, what you expect happens when you interact with certain things. A short example would be if you've completed a level in a first-person shooter, and at the end of a level, you're first shown a screen of, hey, you killed all these monsters, and you press A on a Xbox controller and you continue, and it shows a lot of stats, and you say, that's great. Press A again to continue. And it asks, do you want to reset all this progress in the level and try again? or do you want to continue to the next level? And you press A and it resets the level. And that's an example of a bad experience because you've just been told in your mind that pressing A continues you continually forward. And it's something that you're not expecting to happen. So it's a simple explanation of a bad design. UI is more the visual part of it. It could be how the menu looks. It could be the HUD or heads up display, which is tells you all the things that you don't know because it's a game. So again, if it's a first person shooter, how much health do you have? Are you hitting the monsters where the reticule is? How much ammo you have in your weapon? All the stuff like that. And that's all there to make it easier to play the game and more approachable.
Yeah, great. So how is it that people don't talk about like UI and HUDs in games, right? I mean, we see people like talking about the graphics, the physics, story, but this is very interesting that they don't notice it.
Well, you kind of get a lot used to it. It's kind of a means to an end to explain a lot of the rules in a game. But the main thing you're focused on is where you're going as a character in the game and what you're up to next. You don't really like focus that much on how does my health bar look when you are playing a game, because there's all of these things going on. And also, if you're doing other things on top of that, for example, streaming the game, then you're also interacting with people. So there's a lot going on, and it helps you, but it doesn't have to be intrusive. The focus should be on the game and not on the heads-up display. So you don't want it blinking and like constantly driving your attention away from what's going on in the game.
Right. So I'm very interested to know more about the process of creating UI for a game. How do you guys start it? What kinds of collaborations do you have while designing menus and HUDs? Please tell me about the whole process. I'm also very interested to know the different approaches of each team about UI. For example, IO Interactive and CD Projekt Red here.
Sure. Do you want me to start?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Well, it's UI and UX is a lot about collaboration with other departments. I like to think of it being somewhere between the art director and gameplay, because we interact a lot with both of these two teams and also the audio guys. The art director is, of course, the menu and HUD. It has to follow that style that the art director and game director set down for this. It has to fit in that world. And one place where you can really drive home this is in the menu, because you can show a lot of images and the style of it. With the HUD, it's a lot about what does the gameplay team need to convey to you as a player to not frustrate you. And then you figure out these things, you make prototypes of it, and then you again talk with the art director about the visualization of it. So you make different approaches, show them to him, and he perhaps says, no, that should be a different color, bigger, or try something completely different. So it's a lot about collaboration and talking to different teams and testing stuff out.
Yeah. So how about you, Arash? How do you guys do it at CD Projekt?
Yeah, so the basics are the same, practically. So like the details that they differ is like in that probably like Cyberpunk has a lot of integrated systems. So stuff going on when it comes to UI. So yeah, it's basically... the differences becomes like details, but yeah, like general idea, it's practically the same. And actually, I remember some interesting example about your last question about why people don't notice a game UI or UX. Actually, in my opinion, it's when that happens, it means that you succeeded your goal. So UX or generally which means UI also should be not noticeable. So a good example, more on the UX side is, I don't know if you probably, you guys played Mario, right? So Mario has this drop shadow under his feet, especially in Mario 2E ones. So it's basically a fake shadow. So it doesn't matter where the actual light is. So it's always underneath his feet. But actually, what does it do is that it shows you where you are, like in that time, are you like when you're jumping? So where you exactly are you? So you can see and adjust your jumps and stuff. So that's basically one hidden UI UX part, basically. So it's a more UX thing. So yeah, if you take it away, and players just say, the jumping is not. Doesn't feel good, right? So, but they don't notice that there is no shadow or drop shadow missing. So it's like a very invisible thing. So that's basically the basics of the UX. So the things that you do that makes the player like enjoy the game and better control the game. So yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, you know, I think when the UI and UX are actually good, you don't remember it. After you finish a game, you know, and I think it's only the bad examples that we remember. Like if we see a huge menu with lots of, you know, like when you're trying to upgrade a character or you see lots of confusing things, I think those are the examples that we actually remember. And if a UI is actually good, I think that's why we don't actually remember it. Yeah.
Yeah. In that case, I remember the UI of old Gran Turismo pretty well. Confusing. I don't know if you guys played those games.
That's a mouse.
Yeah. All right. So, Morten, tell us about the approaches and challenges you guys had designing menu and HUD for Hitman 3. And it's pretty interesting that the first thing people say to me about the UI of that game is that it's so clean and sexy. Yo, it's like you guys wore scrubs designing it and Agent 47's personal tailor were qualified it. Like, that's it. You guys did good. It's so fucking clean. What's the secret there?
Well, I only came on like at Hitman 2. So a lot of the menu work and like HUD work, it was already established. I know that they looked at like airport signature or signage and the visual language there, because that's always very clean and efficient and about driving you to a destination. And you could always say that kind of fits to 47 also, because he's very clean, minimalistic, and when he's taking you somewhere, it's never good. And the whole airport identity, it came because you are traveling the world. And that was much more prevalent in the first Hitman 2016 game in the menu. When you boot it up, it was a world screen with lines going across it because it was airport lines. The destination menu, it was like these tall tiles with almost like an airport barcode on it, like a ticket. We slightly moved away from that because our art director, Rasmus Poulsen, he wanted, like he said, more like a travel magazine style for the destination page. So we made it full screen, like so you really got an idea of each location to really blow that up.
Yeah.
I think in general about making it very clean, Hitman is a kind of complex game. There are a lot you can do in it. It's very open-ended. And because of all that, you need to give players like a very clean, precise idea of what goes on and what they're allowed to do, what they can't do, when they're about to get in trouble, and when they're totally fine and can just walk around and enjoy the levels. So it's a lot about trying to find out that certain ground.
Yeah, I love it, the way you guys used numbers in and prioritize the menus. Like one, like planning; two, the difficulty; three, and it's so it's so simple and it make it easy. I mean, some people, I guess, I don't know about it, but some people might be like, no, no, that using that is cheating in UI. But it's very clear, exactly like airports. You see it.
Kinda, it's kind of satisfying, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
No, like, you're like, you know what to do. It's not. It's the opposite of confusing, you know? It's telling you one, you have to do this, two, three. It's just, you know, easy.
It's always good to, and you can show like people where they are in a progress of something that they have to do in menu, so they know how soon they are through it, you could say.
We are players' advocates, so we should like take care of them, like we should babysit them, basically. So we should spoon feed them information and stuff whenever we can, without them noticing.
Excited being, you know, if I want to see it in an artistic way, like Hamid said, maybe the UI is also reflecting on the character. You know, we are talking about an organized, sharp assassin, and the UI is actually telling you that story too. You know, the art style of the game, it's about a modern game in a modern world, yes. But that aside, I think the UI being sharp, minimalistic, and clean, it's also a reflection of Agent 47.
Yeah. And how about you, Arash? Did you have anything like this? Like, hey, we want to make it like an airport. Do you have it like, we want to make it like a future?
Yeah, so like the lore of the UI is important, right? So the lore of the Hitman was basically like his assassin or he's getting like airport tickets and stuff. So for Cyberpunk, there are like a lot of deep lore about the 2D. Basic is like the implement of your eye, right? So we have a lot of freedom, right? So it's like, you know, we get a lot of inspirations, I don't know, from like other cyberpunk titles like Blade Runner and stuff. So yeah, so it's basically the lore of the thing is that in mostly in cyberpunk and sci-fi settings, we have like a lot of ways to show them because we have like the open hand. We can do a lot of stuff because you have this easy solution that everything is basically everything that player sees, like that exactly that the same thing you see the character see the same thing. So it's basically very easy to you have a lot of freeway to do that, do a lot of experimentation, and a lot of stuff. So yeah, that's it's interesting that. The thing about the airport. Yeah, so we have a lot of lore about, I don't know, like basically computer, right? So we have a lot of computer modules on your hat, right? So it's mostly about that.
Oh, and also, I remember something. Last night I was playing Hitman 3 and I was supposed to enter a code into a safe. And it was kind of, I guess, the first time in the trilogy that... we were introduced to a second UI, and I don't know how do you guys call it second. I call it second UI, like within
secondary
the
UI.
Yep, within the game there are like computers or panels that you can interact, and they also have their own UI. Do you guys also design those?
I helped out with on the first level. There are like the screens that you can interact with, both those that give you information about like the location and gives you the map, but also the server room, just the basics of how those looks. But all the door codes and such, that was pure gameplay that set that up.
Yeah, in case of Cyberpunk, yeah, those are called like, I don't know, maybe you can call them secondary UI. Or we call them like devices UI.
I think we invented something right now.
Yeah. Or diegetic UI, whatever you can, like in game world UI, I don't know. But we call them basically, I think, device UI. So yeah, for in cyberpunk cases, you can go to computers and you basically see some similar UI to your own UI. So it was done by our guys and me in some cases, but yeah, mostly other designers, if I remember correctly, and artists. So yeah, is in Cyberpunk case, it's also part of the UI. A lot of those screens and door codes that you see.
Yeah, you guys both talked about freedom and complexity of these games. I mean, when you look at, for example, Hitman, and every game is getting more complex, but I don't feel it. I don't feel lost or confused. And that's very interesting because, again, both of these games are give players a lot of freedom and I'm very curious about the process of making these games more understandable UI-wise. I mean, how do you test different elements? How do you kind of see if the players can relate to the menus or not?
Yeah. Well, one thing I can start with saying is that when I started at IO, one of the gameplay designers called Eskil, he said that now you are completely new and you haven't like worked on this for multiple years. So you got like brand new eyes on it. So you see stuff that other people who've worked here on it, they might not notice because the longer you work on something, the more you know how it works, and then you're not really noticing it anymore. So there were some things that I felt that were a bit hard to judge in Hitman 2016. For example, I often played without sound, which is, you know, a crime to audio designers, but it means that the visuals have to convey what the sound normally does. And one of the things that I thought wasn't clear enough visually was when you're about to be detected by a guard or something, you get like this circle, like curve with a pointer in the middle, pointing towards whoever is detecting you. In Hitman 2016, it was a full circle and the counter, like, or the triangle slightly became bigger. The problem was it didn't show when were you crossing that threshold of, okay, now he's detecting you. So we went in and redesigned that so you can see like the maximum that where it ends. When it reaches this point, now you're detected. And we also made it much more stand out with a yellow color so it really is in your face. And another thing was that I had this nice 3 months set up at IO, and then I would go to Twitch. And because this is a direct sequel, I could just find a first-time streamer of the game and then watch how are they playing the game? When are they getting into trouble? Are they noticing that they are trespassing? Because that used to be just written in a white box with black letters. And it's in your periphery vision all the way in the bottom. And most people, they didn't notice when they were trespassing. Then a guard would notice them and they would freak out, run away, and the guard would start shooting them. And then that would lead, you know, to a bad experience. So we made that much more clear and other stuff like that. We just, you know, see what people do in the game and try to catch those small things and improve upon it. So it's clear to the player.
It's so effective that a lot of times I plan my movements based on that circle. Like, okay, I had this much of space to just cross this guard, and it's really, really helpful and understandable exactly. So
yeah, and it can be quite accelerating when you are almost about to get discovered, yeah. And then you turn like a corner, and then it's completely gone again. So
yeah, also this state indicator like trespassing and stuff on the minimap, genius. It's like we got inspired by that a lot actually. So yeah, thank you for that. But yeah, also, another UX point, like detail that I liked very much. I don't know if you worked on it or not. Probably not. It's basically more gameplay thing maybe. But it's when you enter the range of the cameras, and it's like it always beeps you and it's like flashes your screen, and like the light of the camera is very nice and visible. So I really like that. The camera design is awesome. Yeah, we really like those things.
Yeah, I think that was more gameplay and perhaps the render team. But yeah, when you notice a camera for the first time, it gives like a little red light every time. So you subconsciously at least notice something.
Yeah, that's a very nice touch.
Great. So recently, game developers are trying to make the UI and HUDs of their games as minimum as possible. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's fading away. Quite the contrary, it demands so much more of the UI designers to minimalize it, but at least in my opinion, but also keep it informative. For example, last year, Ghost of Tsushima used a lot of in-game hints in order to minimalize the UI. And Last of Us Part 2 is a very smart example. Or even Assassin's Creed Valhalla changes the feeling of the game based on the accessibility options of the UI and HUDs in the game. How do you see these changes? How do you see the future of UI based on these facts?
Well, it's always about figuring out how to convey something in a really smart way. And like Ghost of Tsushima, like the wind mechanic where it drives you towards your next goal is a really clever idea. It's not something that you can directly copy into every game because then it would feel kind of weird. Okay, in Cyberpunk, it's a wind and then I don't know, people or something that would guide you towards it.
But, sorry, I have to ask something. Is there wind in Night City? Is there?
Yeah, man.
Sandstorms are.
I haven't played the game yet.
Fans are coming. No.
Yeah. But again, you mentioned about the wind in Ghost of Tsushima, but there are moments in the game that I was like, man, I need a mini map for this. You know, sometimes it's kind of frustrating. I mean, it's a good example of accessibility. I mean, how much do you give options? How many to players? I mean, to kind of like, decide how they're going to approach the UI of a game. So how do you approach this, the accessibility of the UI in the games?
I think my connection is a bit unstable currently. I just fell out a bit, but I can try and answer your question and see if it works still.
Yeah, we love them.
We try to show quite a lot of information. And we give the player to disable as much of that as they want. And that's the more you disable, the more frustrating a game Hitman can become. You can disable, like, for example, instincts. The first thing I noticed that player do when they enter a level is hold in the instinct button, spin around and see where the targets are located, and then walk off in direction. If you disable that and you're a new player, well, then you have to explore manually. You can then disable all the guards who have a small dot above their heads, so you don't know who will notice you. You can disable the mechanic for when they are showing when they will notice that you're not supposed to be there, the small bar. Which means that at some point they'll just start shooting at you. And that's very frustrating. So you have to be aware of, like, of course, accessibility. Some people, they have hard of hearing, so visually it needs to work. Perhaps they don't have super eyesight, so we let them increase font sizes and all that stuff. There are a lot of things you need to be aware of when designing for HUD and for people because they play on different types of screens and use different controllers. So there are a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So like the big word here, I guess it's immersion, right? So whenever you disable, like if you see there are actually immersion modes for UI that you can like, and it basically disables everything, right? So you can have like cinematic experiences. So so that's actually an interesting topic. I think it comes to that, unfortunately, we stopped being like, I don't know, maybe creative or something, like as a UI designer in whole. Like there were some trends of this immersive UI started back in Dead Space and Far Cry 2, if you remember. Those have like very immersive and diegetic, which was like a big word there. So you have like basically all the information you needed in the game world. And like basically the character sees the same thing as this, right? So there's a couple of downsides to that. Like first is like it's basically more expensive, right? So if you want to make your UI all diegetic, you have to involve all other departments. Like you have to have like, I don't know, lighting expert for the like the space backpack to show your health and stuff. So for some games it's not possible. The other thing is that the game setting, as you said, like maybe there is no winds in Cyberpunk, so we're gonna have the same mechanic as the same as Ghost of Tsushima, right? So yeah, like if the game setting allows and you have like let's say good budget and like the game size basically that also allows that, I think it's worth to come up with the smart ideas and basically like Ghost of Tsushima is just perfect. But yeah, it's hard really. It's hard really. It's also sometimes, as you said, you sometimes miss the minimap. So basically it means that you have to have those options ready also. So if somebody's confused or like for accessibility reasons, they should be able to turn them on and use them. Also, right? So with those both things should be there. So it's a very fine line and needs a lot of creativity and like work, extra work, other than like basically make a minimal UI and have all the information show. So that's the way we always do it, right?
I think it's about that line, you know, between reality and video games. Like we always say that we want realistic video games, but I think deep down we all want our video game to still be video game, right? Like in Red Dead Redemption 2, we had this mode where you could, you know, switch off everything and just go into the world and ask the addresses that you needed to go to. So I'm not really a fan of that, you know? I mean, yeah, I want realistic video games, but I want realistic video games in graphics, right? And I want that. I don't want the UI to disappear because I'm still playing a video game, you know? And I think we are really, you know, we have a road ahead of us to get to that amount of realism in video games. I think one day we might get there. I don't know, but you know, right now I need that UI.
Yeah, like as you said, it sometimes makes it more difficult. So yeah, basically, the best option is to have both, right? So just a lot of players also are like disabled somehow, so they cannot like function like us. So they have to have helpers. So yeah, that's why I say it's more work and more budget needed for this thing.
It helps you, the heart helps you learn the game, how you're doing. And like if it's a first person shooter and you don't have health shown or shown when you take damage, then all of a sudden you would just fall over. And that would be kind of frustrating, not knowing when you should pull back or you are free to go and attack.
Yeah. So as you guys know, I'm a sound designer and a composer. Some people in our fields find sound designing for UI something rather frustrating, but for me it's so much fun and exciting, giving life to all those movements and help the players understand the flow of HUD of the game is something very rewarding. I'm curious, how do you guys manage this part? Do you work with your sound designers? Please tell me about the process of working with the sound team.
They really like put in some really nice sounds for like the menu and the inflow, and that really pays off in a lot of ways that people might not consciously notice that much, but when you hear it before and after or without sound, it really makes a big difference.
I mean, something that's very, very interesting in Hitman, that when you pause the game, there's no music except this stopwatch sound. But if you, and it helps you to figure out what you want. It helps you figure out what you want to do in the world of the game. But if you stay in the pause menu for like more than, 5 minutes, it slowly goes to be a kind of a music, like a spy music. Like if you're far away from your computer or your TV, it calls you, come on, you have a mission to do. But it never distracts you. This is how genius this game is. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, we have some really good audio designers who do a lot of that stuff. I was told a little bit about how the system works. For example, when Hitman walks, they have, like, they take in what kind of shoes is it and what kind surface is he walking upon and mix it together. So is it rubber shoes on like asphalt or like pebbles and something? And then they modify the sound based on that. So it's, they do some really, really cool stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Audio designers are geniuses. Yeah. So you have to also think about like the player experience also like us. So yeah, basically from my experience, I was like, working actually closely when I was like designing stuff for like UI for the UIs. So we were basically sitting with each other sometimes and like one day maybe even. So I was like coming up to him and with the list of the stuff that I wanted. So for example, like when you enter the menu and when you the loading is appearing, when you when this happens and that happens. Actually, for Cyberpunk, it's super important because there is a lot of loot. So in the game, so whenever you loot, you have different sound effect for the item type that you loot. So and the, also the rarity. So it's like that's also somehow handled through different systems that they have. And like there's like a lot of different audio cues that mix and matches and do it and like. The same goes when you're like in your inventory screen and you're changing your equipment and like removing this disassembling stuff and other things, right? So yeah, a lot of UI design, UI sound design actually was done. And yeah, the and like it's cool also to. Like as you said, like UI has a lower also like the sound design of the game also has a lower, right? So for Cyberpunk it was basically like a retro gadget, like a fidgety gadget, like for 80s 90s, basically like the lower of the game. But yeah, so it's like the look of the UI is modern, so we could have gone with like a beep 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 boop more. But it's like very more retro and it's like more 70s. So it makes it contradicting. So it makes more satisfying. I don't know if you heard some stuff for that. But yeah.
This is very interesting because I never thought about it this way, that how much are we going to leave the guiding the player to the sound department? How much are we going to leave to the UI department? Like, does this happen in your daily routine?
I can't say that I'm so involved in like what should have sounds and how they should be. That is more like a different member of the UI team, Nils, who is a senior UI designer, normally talks more with the sound designers. So I can't comment on that much.
Yeah. So generally, like for accessibility, maybe more purposes, everything in the game should be communicated at least in two different channels. So for example, like if somebody's noticing you, like you said, like if somebody is seeing you and you're getting noticed, the sound of course should be there. So sometimes I'm not paying attention on the screen, I'm looking at something else, I should be able to hear where the bar is filling up and like when it's done. So it's like I think there's some effects for that in Hitman.
Yeah, and Hitman is like...
So, but some people
that,
are...
That sound kills me, man.
It must also have been a really interesting audio challenge to like... what does it sound like when somebody is about to notice you?
Yeah, I know. I'm approaching my death. And I'm done. I'm finished.
You're approaching your checkpoint, Lisa. Yeah, so as I said, like, so if you're like deaf, so you cannot hear anything, you cannot notice that. So yeah, then that information should be also available to you in other forms. So basically that's the concept of the multiple channels. So everything in the ideal world, but it's mostly not, everything that that is giving you information in the game should be able to get it in two different, at least two different channels, right? So yeah.
And what UI designers actually do is amazing. Like, you know, I played a lot of Apex Legends, and what they do, because that's a professional video game, you know, they have all these tournaments and stuff. And you know, sometimes, like, when I have a grenade near me, if I hear it, I know it's a grenade. And if I see it, I know it's a grenade. Like, it's a second, it becomes a second nature in me. Yeah. Like it is in Hitman when you're, you know, they're discovering your true identity. I mean, it has to become the second nature of the player.
Yeah. Actually, like a counter example for that is like, I was playing Gears of War, last one, Gears 5. So in that game, they don't show the UI indicator for the grenade. And we were playing on the highest difficulty. So it was becoming very, very frustrating because we were always dying from the grenade, and the only thing that you can basically hear is the sound of it, but it's like everything is like blowing up, and it's like you cannot can't hear the grenade coming, and it's like, yeah, it's just 1 second, you're done. So yeah,
I was thinking about the right now, imagining that indicator, I was thinking about the colors in Hitman, because do you have a rule book? Like, I think in Hitman, generally, things are white, but the things that related to assassination and targets are red, and the things that you gotta find and in like exploring are blue, and things that hint you about your surrounding are yellow. And if I'm right, yeah.
Yeah, we kind of divided at least some of them up into like green is always good. Yellow, that's something you have to be aware of. You're about to be spotted or you're trespassing. So, you know, it calls your attention. And red is like danger. You're being shot at. You're being hunted and all those things. So that's a very simple like color scheme. Then we have blue, which is these additional objectives. Which is somewhere in between. Of course, you also always need to be aware of with colors is like people who are red-green colorblind.
Oh, yeah.
Things like that. So that's, again, another small UI thing that is. So, and that's just one way that people can be colorblind. There are multiple ways. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so this is a very... This is a question that people ask me a lot. What sort of skills are required for a UI designer to work in a AAA a game studio?
Well, first of all, strong communication skills, because you'll be talking to a lot of other people. It's really good to be able to formulate your ideas instead of just, you know, showing them some sketch of how it's, you think it should be, and just, you know, not be able to say why it should be or like convey the thought behind it. Of course, you need to be like good visual, know like about colors, fonts, creating a visual hierarchy, all of those things really factor in my opinion.
Yeah, how did you get your first gig in IO Morton?
Well, I was actually kind of surprised I got the job. I kind of applied on a whim, and I didn't think I would get it because, you know, it was IOI, and I don't know, I hadn't worked in AAA before. I'd worked for a small indie developer called Introversion Software on like four of those games, but that was a lot of print and website design and all of these other things, not directly in the game often. So I was a bit surprised, but I guess it was both about like chemistry. Who do you think you'll work well with? And do you have visual skills that will translate into UI well?
Yeah, you and Niels were the UI designers of Hitman. How is the collaboration working? How do you guys kind of approach the concept of UI in the game?
We are five UI designers here at IO Interactive. Yeah, you never know. But sometimes gameplay will come and say, we need to convey this objective or this gameplay element. And then we'll discuss it among us. Often I'll create a visual mock-up and how it should work. That could be either a static image, like in Photoshop, or it could be an animation, like we use After Effects or something, which might make it easier to understand. And then we discuss it both in the UI team and with the gameplay and perhaps also with the art director when we think we've reached something that might work. So it's a lot of discussion and iteration, because what might I think is intuitive and conveyed really well, it might not really do the same for a different person. And it's often good to get other people's eyes on it to make sure that it actually works.
Yeah. So what are your suggestions for newcomers, for the people who wants to get into the industry?
Well, there are, I guess, multiple ways. Now there are a lot of free editors that you can, like, basically download, like GameMaker or Unity or Unreal, and, you know, try out stuff in those. There are a lot of tutorials online. There are also several really good talks if you want into like UI and understand more of it and hear from somebody who knows it better than me, or, you know, present it better. And it's all about visual communication. You can also like join game jams online, try out stuff to meet people, or like take your favorite game and go and disable all the HUD and try and make your own on top of that screenshots. Like, that's also a good way just to try and reimagine how would Cyberpunk look if you had to like make all of these odd elements?
Yeah.
So there are a lot of different ways, or like internship. You know, check different companies like LinkedIn sites or their websites. They often have like different positions that they are seeking people for.
Yeah, and people at IO that are working on next 007. So people, if you're interested and want to work on a new James Bond game, oh my God, I can't believe it. You guys are, this is like destiny, man. I mean, Hitman
is really cool.
James
Bond. Is the dream.
Yeah. I mean, look at it. Agent 47 and the other one is Agent 007. This is
all about sevens.
Yeah. Are you excited about it?
Yeah, it's interesting to be able to work on such a big franchise, and there haven't been a game in a long time. So I hope we can hopefully do it justice. And as you said, we're seeking multiple people for that. So among them a UI designer, so you can check out the website if this is something for you.
Fantastic. Right. So last question. Each of you, please tell me about your favorite games regarding their UI design. I start first. Mine is the revolutionary and beautiful UI of Destiny games. I mean, is it me or is it really revolutionary? Because after Destiny, I saw the same pattern and kind of approach about UI in other games like Assassin's Creed, all like Division, even some in Cyberpunk, I guess.
Yep. So they introduced this very good cursor for console, right? So that's that allowed them to make a lot of different layouts, and it works perfectly for Destiny. Yeah, and a lot of the games maybe copied that, and maybe some of them are not good, very goodly, like they didn't implement it good enough. But yeah, that was a nice revolution.
What's your favorite about UI?
Probably classic, as I said, like the disk space. They were like,
wow,
one of the, yeah.
What was the reason?
Yeah, me too. I'm a huge fan of disk space, man.
Yeah. is there any recent game or Ash you admire?
Recent games. Yeah, Assassin's Creed games are very good. Like,
fantastic.
Was great. Yeah, Assassin's Creed was great. Yeah, in the caliber of like RPG games. Assassin's Creed, but yeah, also like other games like Hitman is perfect, like very minimalistic. Yeah.
Yeah. How about you, Morten?
I've always been a big fan of like turn-based strategy games, especially squad-based. So something XCOM. Like XCOM,
yes.
The Reimagined, when you both like reinventarize like a whole genre that creates multiple games and those decide that use that UI as a base template often, then you know you've done something really right. Mm-hmm. Also like other strategy games like Invisible Ink, it's very good at telling you what you can do and when you'll get in trouble doing something. Or Into the Breach, which is a game about like UI and telling what happens before you do it. And that's like they had a talk like if they couldn't convey it in a visual way, what would happen? Then that monster would not appear in the game. So that's clearly a lot of UI thought that went into that also. So
yeah, I guess most difficult like job or UI is in the strategy games, and maybe after that or like RPG games. But yeah, our strategy games has the like you have the most difficult task of telling all the systems and give the interaction to the player so they can interact with the game. Because
all genres have their own like specific difficulties. Like if it's an RPG, you have a lot of equipment and a lot of party members and magic and a whole lot of stats that you need to convey. In a strategy game, you can convey a lot of data because it's not, you don't have to react now. You can sit back and like take in your options. And like Hitman, one of our small difficulties is like trying to get people to replay levels. So that's also something that we really try to with like challenges and the whole inflow.
There's a lot of touches. Like, yeah, as you said, like the senses are very nice. The other thing is like objective markers that they're like optional, basically. So even you start the game, start a level, you don't have any objective marker, which is great. Yeah. So, and you can go there and basically choose if you want to have like a specific objective and start like a, steps of the task basically to get your target. Yeah.
Mission stories,
and the intels are something different. I mean, last night I was playing the game, and there's this murder mystery mission, and I was like, "How are they going to approach this? This is something different than other Hitmans." And I was amazed by it. It was a fantastic mission. Yeah, great job introducing all the family members. Great, great game. So,
Knives Out. Yeah, it's basically like it's inspired heavily by Knives Out. And
exactly.
Like, yeah. I guess, in my opinion, it's best one of the best Hitman levels. It's awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the gameplay team really worked that out well.
Right. So, all right, guys. that's it. Thank you very much for all of you for participating in this hopefully educational episode. I'm a fan of your work, and it was such an honor doing this with you guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.